The McKinney team with Keller Williams has one simple philosophy. The clients come first. And they're going to keep constant communication with you throughout the buying and selling process. And if you've ever gone through, you know, closing, buying, selling, that is just, I mean, just such a nice feeling to know that you're going to be in the loop throughout the entire process. Travis and Emily McKinney will make that happen for you. It's the McKinney team with Keller Williams. Check out their Facebook page and give them a like there. Even if you're not in the market at the moment, you want to make sure you kind of keep tabs and know where you're going to go, when you need to buy or sell. It's the McKinney team with Keller Williams, Travis and Emily McKinney on Facebook. And, of course, check out the website, ZillowKnoxville.com. It's ZillowKnoxville.com. You can check the listings and see what's available. The Knoxville market, I'm telling you, man, it's spring and fall. It is just always crazy hot. Houses go on the market, and they're pending seemingly immediately. So if you're in the market, check them out at ZillowKnoxville.com. We're talking about the quarterback position. Dan Harrelson has gone on record himself as saying he feels like it's Keller Christ's job to lose. Dan Harrelson of Vols Wire, that's kind of a new USA Today property type of thing. The Athletic's kind of the new entire network on the scene. And David Ubin, of course, covering the team for them here at Tennessee. The Athletic put out some different grad transfer articles looking at the entire landscape of the grad transfer thing in college football. One is titled, Coming and Going Soon, Understanding the Phenomenon of Grad Transfer Quarterbacks in College Football. It kind of profiles.
Which is about to go even more crazy, by the way, with the new rules.
Oh, you know, it's about to be insane. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I mean, just nuts. And it's already pretty crazy. I mean, it starts by profiling Brandon Dawkins, who was at Arizona. I mean, this isn't like, you know, a guy that just won the Heisman or, you know what I mean? Like, it's
right.
It's not even like a top three or four quarterback in the country type of thing. But it says, as soon as Arizona quarterback Brandon Dawkins announced in February he was leaving as a grad transfer, his second recruitment was immediately going down in his DMs. Coaches from UCLA, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, FAU, and other FBS schools all over the country were lining up to send him private Twitter messages urging him to reach out and set up a campus visit. I mean, and that article kind of profiles how crazy the re-recruitment is, the second recruitment of these quarterbacks that transfer. I think what's maybe more important for our needs here is, you know, people that follow Tennessee football is the companion piece, gauging the success of graduate transfer quarterbacks, because that's the big question for us.
Before we go any further, this was before my time, and there might be some listeners kind of wondering the same thing. Do you guys remember what it was like whenever grad transfers kind of first hit the market? Because wasn't it around like 2006, 2007? Was that like a big storyline?
No, it never happened.
No.
It never mattered. If there was one, it was always just some kid going to go to a school where he had a connection so he could get into coaching.
Yeah.
I don't remember any grad transfers before Russell Wilson. Do you?
No, not really. None that made like a difference or an impact.
I mean, that,
especially not like him.
And this article really does stem around kind of how Russell Wilson tried to shape and change the landscape of the grad transfer.
I mean, it just didn't make any sense. If you had a guy that was going to be a senior and he was good, why is he not the starter? Like, that was
right.
The original premise. If I got a fifth-year, you know, quarterback that's still wanting to play college football, then he's going to be playing for me kind of thing. But that NC State situation was so weird where they, you know, there was that the baseball dynamic with Russell Wilson, so he wasn't always at practice for the football team. Then you had Mike Glennon, who was supposed to be, you know, it was like, yeah, Russell Wilson's pretty good, but Mike Glennon's going to be even better. And so if Russell Wilson's not winning the job, he goes to Wisconsin. And obviously he was so much better than what they had and has proven to be a, you know, really good NFL quarterback as well.
Before Russell Wilson, just as far as names that people might recognize, Jeremiah Masoli went from Oregon to Ole Miss. He's still playing in the CFL.
He was terrible at Ole Miss.
Greg Paulus. I only know that name because I follow
we
basketball.
Know why you know, we know why you know that name.
Yeah.
Is a basketball player that went to play quarterback at Syracuse.
Because he was, never mind. Go on. Anyone else?
That's basically the two. Ben Mock went from Wake Forest to Cincinnati.
No.
I don't remember.
That was 2007. Yeah, pretty much it.
This article has it broken down by starts. So there's guys that have transferred, a lot of grad transfer guys that have gone and just never even started at their new school.
Well, I mean, you think of this, especially at quarterback, like the situation of transferring as a grad transfer and being a good quarterback is probably not high. Typically, if you're a good quarterback and you graduate, you just stay at the school you're at and, you know, enroll in some grad classes or something like that. You know what I mean? A lot of guys, like, play their senior year with their degree already. I mean, that's not unusual. But normally, if you're good, you just stay.
Right.
It's very, very weird to be good, graduate, and then for whatever reason say, it's better for me to go elsewhere or not go to the NFL. Which is why the Keller Chris situation is so strange and different to me. You know, compared to something like the Gardner Minshew or whatever. You know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. That okay. But Chris, four-star talent, started a lot of games, won a lot of games, and the injuries and the other guy getting better and better, and you kind of want continuity if you're David Shaw. It's just kind of like, man, we got to go with this guy. You need to go somewhere where you can play because you're good enough to play. That's a weird situation because I feel like most, you know, coaches in that situation would say, be a backup for me. You know, we joke about Nick Saban. He does everything he can to keep a backup quarterback that's good, and then they transfer midseason and he blames them. This was David Shaw saying, listen, I get that you're my backup, but you're not a backup. He's just the young kid, and I don't want to lose him, and he's pretty good too. You need to go somewhere where you can make an impact for a year because you can go to the NFL. But I can't sacrifice my program this year for that. Boom, there's Tennessee.
Yeah, most of the time it was guys transferring like kind of to different levels of school, even Power 5 to Group of 5, because if you go down to Group of 5, like you know you'll be the starter, basically. That's why you've been recruited by those schools as a grad transfer. The article talks a lot about NC State's quarterback. His last name's Finley. So here's a section that applies to Keller Chris in Tennessee. Among these grad transfer quarterbacks, few have taken the path Finley chose in leaving a Group of 5 program to compete at a Power 5 school. Gardner Minshew and Drew Brown, that's obviously talking about moving up. Keller Chris would be a Power 5 to Power 5 guy, are the latest to make the jump, but Finley and Virginia's Ben Kirk are the only passers who found success doing that. And then here's the stat I wanted to get to. From Power 5 to Group of 5 quarterbacks, those guys have averaged 8.5 starts, over 1,900 yards passing, right at 13 passing touchdowns and 7.5 interceptions after they've made the move. Power 5 to Power 5 guys, there's been almost an identical number of players in there, you know, since they started tracking this. They started 7 games on average, 1,470 yards passing, 10.2 touchdowns, 5.8 interceptions. These stat lines offer a more realistic sense of what these teams tend to get in a grad transfer quarterback. So many of these imports arrive facing outsized expectations after high-profile recruitments. The hype is hard to live up to, and 19 of those 85 graduate transfers, or 22%, ended up making 0 starts at their new school. So if you want to just look at data, you would actually say that Garantano has a 22% or say Garantano has a 21% chance to be the starter. You know, Keller Chris is at 79, and then there's maybe a 2% chance of, like, something really odd happening, and neither one of them starts the first game. And then there's the whole success or failure rate with, you know, I mean, you look at this list, and there's not many guys, even from the group, grad transfers who have started – you know, 13 or plus games, 7 to 12 starts. You look at this list, and it doesn't look good.
Well, that's the thing, though, and that's what we just said. Most grad transfer quarterbacks aren't transferring because they're good. So I guess for, you know, the question with Keller Chris is, do we think that this is closer to a Russell Wilson situation where, what was it? Like, I want to play baseball. And the coach was like, no, plus I think this guy behind you is probably just as good, so go ahead. Wisconsin, you know, gets him and he lights the world on fire. Is this a situation where, you know, David Shaw said, well, you've missed a lot of time and we feel pretty comfortable with Costello. We don't want to yank him now. He's basically been the starter for 2 years or a year and a half, whatever it's been. We're going to go with him, but you're good. You need to find something. I mean, it feels more like Russell Wilson than it does Gardner Minshew. It feels more like that. And I'm not saying Keller Christ is going to be Russell Wilson good, but I don't think this is a, yeah, I'm terrible. I'm not good enough to go to the NFL, but I can transfer and try to play somewhere else. If that's the case, he transfers way down. But this is a guy who just didn't play, so he doesn't have enough film last year to try to go pro. He's been banged up. He still has, you know, he has to prove he's healthy, and I think this is an opportunity for him to do that. So I'm leaning more towards Keller Christ is probably going to be the exception and the high end of the grad transfer possibility as opposed to the guy who comes here and doesn't do anything, at least based on, well, I guess what we've heard so far and if he does, in fact, win the job. I mean, there's also a chance he would be good, and if he had come here and maybe we had a different quarterback situation, he doesn't win the job just because the other guy's really good. But in this situation, I think he has a legitimate chance.
From Power 5 to Power 5 quarterbacks, Nate, as you said, it was basically a 10-6 touchdown interception ratio. I mean, just looking at Tennessee's quarterbacks, all three that played last year, it was 11-10.
When it says like who's the high end? Does it break it down like which like four or five guys were the best?
And well, it has where the they whole went? List. I was just gonna kind of pick out the ones that jumped off the page because they were kind of SEC guys or good or bad or whatever. Mm-hmm. It has them broken down by the number of starts total. So we'll start with guys that went 13 plus starts. You know, the Ryan Finley kid's the one they profile because he went from Boise State to NC State and has been good. There's been a lot of SEC guys that transfer kind of down and out, like Patrick Toles at Kentucky or Jeff Driscoll right. At Florida. I thought Grayson Lambert, that went from Virginia to Georgia and started 13 games for Georgia, is kind of a data point that you could look at. Like, do you think Keller Christ will be a Grayson Lambert type of player? You know, Nathan Peterman, Tennessee to Pitt, is on that list. He started 24 games for Pitt.
See, those aren't grad transfers, though, so it's a little different, right?
Yeah, no, these are okay. This is grad transfer quarterbacks.
Peterman wasn't a grad transfer. He was just a transfer. Didn't he have to sit out a year? Am I crazy?
I thought he graduated.
I thought he was like a true sophomore. All right, sorry.
That's a good
keep
question.
Keep going.
I don't know. You've got Jake Coker that went from Florida State to Alabama mm-hmm. and started 14 games for the Tide. There's some other SEC guys that you know kind of failed at their place and then went somewhere else. Tyler Murphy, Florida to Boston College. We mentioned Clint Trickett that was Florida State to West Virginia. And then of course Russell Wilson is the poster child for. You know, if you go back to 2011, he started 14 games for Wisconsin after coming from NC State. Then there's the list from 7 to 12 starts, and you've got guys that, if you're looking for maybe the low end, Austin Appleby started 7 games for Florida. He came from Purdue. He definitely didn't look like an upgrade over what Florida probably could have just gotten. I mean, he looked like a replacement level bottom end player. There was Trevor Knight. Remember when he went from Oklahoma to A&M? He was more the runner guy for Texas A&M.
He was good. He was pretty solid.
You had Everett Golson that went from Notre Dame to Florida State.
Does
he started
Trevor
8 games.
Knight, does that make a little more sense of a comparison?
I think so. He's
Baker
even
Mayfield?
More of a runner than
No,
than
I'm,
Chris,
I'm just saying situationally.
Similar body
like
size.
A guy comes in, I think Trevor got banged up. Baker Mayfield, you know, gets
was,
a chance.
Is obviously really good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I guess the question we really need to be asking is how good is the Costello kid at Stanford?
Right.
Because if you say Chris isn't as good as Costello, I think a lot of people are like, oh, he couldn't even win the job at Stanford. But if Costello's a top 10 quarterback and Chris is just outside that, I think people don't want leftovers from other places for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Especially at quarterback. But Shaw is typically pretty good at quarterback. and has been. So, like, that's like saying, well, he couldn't be the starting running back at Alabama. I'd still take him, at least right now, especially. There are just certain places, you know, where you get a guy and it's more to it than, oh, he didn't win the starting job, so he transferred here. And especially at quarterback, because, man, there just aren't a lot of really good ones. And if somebody happens to have two, it's like what we talked about at Alabama. One of them's going to go. One of them's out.
Yeah.
Most likely. You know, we talked about Jalen Hurts. Like, if Jalen Hurts transfers because Tua beats him out, I don't think there's a lot of schools in the country who would say, oh, we don't want Tua. He couldn't even win the job at Bama. No, you want that kind of guy on your team. He took a team to a national championship twice. He's good. It's just, I think Trevor Knight's an interesting one. Like, gets a little nicked up. The guy behind him is showing a lot of promise, and they just kind of say, hey, this might be an opportunity for you to go somewhere else where you can play because this guy's going to start.
And I don't think he was a great fit for Oklahoma's, like, main offense. He was such a runner, and his passing ability. I mean, that ultimately, that's why he wasn't even better at A&M.
Yeah.
Talking about Trevor Knight. He just wasn't a good enough passer. But still, for them, was, a solid option. You know, I look at Grayson Lambert as a guy because he was such a pocket guy. I don't even remember.
Would you take this right now from Keller Crist this season? Would you take it? 162 of 256. That's 63% completion. Call it 2,000 yards. 12 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and he takes 11 sacks.
I would.
Is it take it or roll the dice with what actually is going to happen? Or, I mean, it's not bad.
I'm just saying if we got to the end of the season and that was your stat line, would you be just woefully disappointed?
Did he play every game?
Mm-hmm.
What were the touchdowns? Seems really low.
1 second, please. 12 touchdowns, 1 interception.
I mean, Tennessee better be running the ball pretty damn well if we're only throwing 12 touchdown passes and he's played most of the games.
It's more than all of last season. I know that's not a lot to go off of.
Dude, they didn't score a touchdown for like a quarter of last season
and it was
in a row.
Bad.
So
that's what Grayson Lambert did in 2015 at Georgia when they went 10-3.
Okay.
They ran
the hell of the ball, right? So that makes sense.
He did not play against Florida at all. But you know, and obviously this schedule, I think we would all agree, is much more difficult than the one Tennessee faces this year.
Wait, what?
Tennessee's
okay.
Schedule is
I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, much easier is what I meant to say. I apologize.
The Georgia schedule, Grayson Lambert,
was much easier than what Keller Crist will face. But, I mean, if a guy protects the ball and you're running the football well and you're winning the games you're supposed to and you win a couple that maybe you weren't expected to. I think most people, like, they beat Auburn that year with him going 12 of 17 for 97 yards. Like, just manage the game, run the football, play good I don't know that Tennessee can play defense like that, but maybe that year's Auburn team would be more like South Carolina for this year's team. You know, it's like,
right,
go into South Carolina, run the football, play good defense, win 20-13, and get the hell out of there. You know, I mean, they it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty, but you did enough to win 10 games. Yeah, you beat Missouri 9-6. Yeah, you beat Auburn 20-13. It took overtime to beat Georgia Southern. You beat Georgia Tech 13-7. They did beat Penn State in the bowl game. Like, do we think Grayson Lambert at Virginia was better than Keller Crist at Stanford?
Wait, that's also a Jeremy Pruitt defense, right?
That's the tie.
The most
ironic
thing.
That's why
thing?
I picked that team.
Yeah.
Because I forgot that Lambert was the quarterback for the Jeremy Pruitt defense at Georgia. I think that was year two, though, in fairness.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, the year before.
But, hell, if they won 10 that year, then hopefully Tennessee's winning 7 this year. Right?
Yeah. Well, and I'm looking at Grayson Lambert, his final year at Virginia. They were 5-7. So you get around a little bit more talented team and all of a sudden that guy's good. But, I mean, Crist was playing okay with a pretty talented team at Stanford. I don't know. It's an interesting look. But if Grayson Lambert can do that in the SEC, just protect the ball, hit big plays when they're there, hand it off, you play as solid a defense as you possibly can, I think that's probably the game plan.
You said 11 sacks per season?
He took 11 sacks that year in 12 games.
That's less than one per
game.
That would be incredible.
Against
the defenses that we're having to go up against, I would take that any day of the week.
I mean, I think everybody would take that sack number for sure, without question.
And going back to where Davey started the segment with, like, do we remember this happening? You're going to have more grad transfer success stories because the amount of total grad transfers is going to go through the roof here,
right?
In my opinion, because it's the schoolwork is easier to get done online, different way. Like, you can get done with school faster, more efficiently now. The not just grad transfer, but the transfer rules are being relaxed with each and every NCAA update, basically. So in my and we've seen from the NFL draft. And really recruiting from high school into college, that especially at quarterback, the people around you and your surroundings and your coaching can create a light year of difference between your play in one place, Nate Peterman, to your play at a different place. So
maybe that's the one we should be focusing on.
24 starts for Pitt, seasons.
What were his stats at Pitt?
Lit it up, right? So. So Davey, to answer your original question, no, it wasn't a thing then, and I think we are in the process of it becoming a big deal. And you'll still, just like the NFL drafts first round, you'll still have these grad transfers or transfer quarterbacks that you think will be a stud, because like if Jalen Hurts does transfer and go somewhere else, people might think, oh man, this team's going to be incredible now with Jalen Hurts, and it might just be a complete dud, or it could go the other way. Would Peterman do at Pitt?
Would you take 185 of 306 for 2,855 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 7 picks?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Can we get the ACC schedule also? Because
was that one season?
We'd be rolling.
Yeah, it was 1 year. Yeah, that was his last year.
David, you're a little shell shocked, I think, by how bad that offense was last year. Like when he said 12 touchdowns, like, we got. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking you got the UTEP and the ETSU. You probably just run it on them early, and then I'm factoring in the new redshirt rule too.
But really good teams, that's when your quarterback throws 3 touchdown passes. You know, so like the whole, like that's you know, you throw 3 or 4 touchdown passes against the bad teams. You hope to throw 2 against the good teams.
Yeah.
And you end up with, you know, north of 24 touchdown passes, not south of how many games you have.
I'm also expecting a lot of low scoring games this year.
And I think they're going to try and run the football a lot too, a lot of times touchdown passing too is skewed by how much you run the ball inside the 10-yard line. Don't you expect this team to try and pound the ball in a lot around the 5 and 10-yard line, not so much putting the ball in the air? Who knows?
Shotgun at the 1.
Jerry Garantano threw a pick in the red zone in the scrimmage, so I don't know.
Maybe why Dan Harrelson thinks Chris is now.
You can't lose games in the SEC and still win.
Welcome back to 3 and Out. This segment of the program brought to you by Matlock Tire and Auto Service. Check out their 4 area locations: Athens, Maryville, Lenoir City, and Knoxville. And online, it's MatlockTireService.com, the official tire service of 3 and Out and The Drive, right here at Fan Run Radio. We have an update, Houston. College football's biggest story is
J.J. Peterson cleared. Is that it? Did I guess right? Is that the biggest story?
No. I said college football's, not Tennessee's.
Yeah. Oh.
College football's
that's all I care about.
Story.
That's it. That's the only one that matters.
The president of Ohio State University said the school's ongoing investigation involving the football program and Coach Urban Meyer, quote, will be finished when it's finished. I thought it was like a independent, investigation where it wasn't going to be like, why do we have the president coming out and talking about it? The 14-day deadline was supposed to be Sunday. We had debated a little bit whether they would try and news dump something on this maybe late today or later. Ohio State President Michael Drake, along with the Board of Trustees, will determine what action is needed after hearing the results of the investigation. Drake said in an interview on WOSU Thursday, those are good call letters, that Sunday is not a hard deadline for a decision on Meyer's future. Quote, there's a great deal of interest in this investigation. We wanted to make sure we had really good information, and there is time pressure. We wanted to have that information as quickly as possible.
There is time pressure?
I think what he's saying is they wanted to put the 14-day...
Time pressure. I got
to
you.
To put time pressure on the investigation. We wanted to have that information as quickly as possible.
They should have hyphened that for you. It's not your fault.
The most important thing is to get good information so we can make the right decisions going forward. He said that things are moving apace in the investigation.
What the hell is this guy saying?
But did not comment on what was being asked or who was being interviewed.
Just word, 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 word.
Zach Smith and Courtney Smith, his ex-wife, have both confirmed through their attorneys that they spoke to the group of investigators earlier this week.
Well, that's good.
Only after the media said...
Why haven't you talked to them? Good job, media. High five everybody in this room. We talked about that. Giving us a little bit of credit.
I mean, the media is two of these three big stories, maybe three out of four, if you throw Baylor in there, the media's had to do all the dirty work because people around these programs like just won't.
The more
at
we
all.
Look, the more we find, and we don't want to find anything. Don't
exactly.
Look.
I watched that the HBO movie on Paterno. And I mean, it was some low-ranking reporter that, you know, started talking to victims and then had to continue to fight through all the, you know, slander back at, you know, the recoil, I guess you could call it, from the people that try and just gloss over it all and get it covered up. I don't know if Brett McMurphy's going to be, I mean, he'll be that figure, I guess, when they make the movie. If more stuff comes out and Urban Meyer goes down and... Or maybe there'll be a movie about the cover-up. I don't know.
Apparently, WOSU asked President Drake if Athletic Director Gene Smith is also under investigation, and Drake responded by saying this, "I don't know all the questions they're asking or what they're going about. I'm waiting until they come forward, and then we'll try to use that information the best we can." I don't know when I have the information, I'll know. He sounds like Michael Scott. Like, this is embarrassing. This is bad.
I mean, shouldn't they have some direction on what they're investigating? I mean,
nope, like, they're waiting for things to come forward.
And Well, he's saying he's waiting for, like, the report from the investigative team. At least maybe I'm giving him too much of the benefit of the doubt here.
No, but you're probably right.
That's what he's saying.
He's saying, I don't know what they're doing. But... Is he supposed to know a little bit more about the investigation or no?
No, because they want it to be independent, right? So you don't want the president telling him what to look at and what not to.
Okay.
Hey, make sure you check Gene Smith. I hear he's dirty. Or like, hey, make sure you don't investigate Gene Smith. I don't want our AD to have to get fired too.
The president could ultimately have some backlash if things come out.
It's true.
A lot of people
are killing him for that quote of saying, "I don't know all the questions. I don't know I don't know much about the investigation." But Nate, I think that maybe is a good point by you. In fact, I won't say maybe. I think it is a good point by you that he needs to be removed. He doesn't need to have the information. Like, he doesn't need to know who they're talking to and when and where and why and what exactly they're asking. As long as when he gets all of the information they give him, he then knows that. Because he does need to be able to, you know, see all the information and say, well, did you ask them about this, 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 and this? And they need to say, yes, here is the entire transcript of the conversation. Because he's also setting himself up for some plausible deniability here. And I that's why I'm kind of like, should he know more or should he know less? Because I'm with you. I don't want him to be tampering with the investigation, but I also don't want the investigation to be a sham. He get the crooked info and just say, yep, that's all I knew and I accepted it as truth. It goes both ways if you're Michael Drake, in my opinion. Like, maybe you don't want to know now, and that's fine, but you better have like video evidence of everything, transcripts, the questionnaire, like whatever the hell it was they were asking, you better know what they said and what they got back as the answer. Because if they just come up to you and say, we did the investigation, he's clean, and you say, all right, cool, and then something else drops, you're on the hook, in my opinion. So I'm with you, and I'm also just saying, this is weird. You got to play both sides a little bit here.
Well, that's what, when we talked to Barrett Salee, I thought that's what was most interesting that he said is like Ohio State is fighting this for Ohio State. Urban Meyer's fighting it for Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all think that those two things are going to end up kind of meeting and being the same, you know, they're going to have the same goal, but for different reasons. Urban Meyer's going to want to stay at Ohio State. Ohio State's going to want to keep Urban Meyer because that's what's best for each party.
Mm-hmm.
But if information does come out in the investigation that maybe we're not sure about or don't know yet, that makes their motivation split between those two entities, that's when things could get really nutty. Because if all of a sudden the president's going to be on the hook for something, at some point you might just have to throw Urban Meyer under the bus and say, yeah, we're going to have to move on from him because
yep.
I want to save my job and I want to make Ohio State
better.
Not go down with
right.
all this. Because
yes.
you can't have Urban Meyer saying, yeah, I reported it to everybody. I even told the president. I told everybody. I did my job, because then that makes Ohio State look bad. So if those two things start butting heads in public perception even, that's when it could get really odd. And, I mean, we're up against the timeline here. I mean, it's August 17th. The Buckeyes play. They open on Saturday, just like Tennessee. It's an Oregon State team that's awful, but still, like, the season is right around the corner. Tomorrow, we're 2 weeks away from kickoff. So if they're not done on Sunday, if this thing goes to the middle of next week, you're a week and a half before your first game having to make a call here. You know they're going to make some decision, announce something. Then there's going to be he's either reinstated or he's suspended, or maybe it doesn't matter if he's suspended for like the first four games because
true,
you know, you can announce that the day before the game because they're going to be preparing like he's not going to be there anyway. Maybe that's the plan. How much would you, I mean? Wouldn't you want to be kept in the loop some though as the investigation
goes? That's what I'm saying.
Goes?
I don't know. Because I liked your point. I don't want him tampering. I don't want him to juice the answers, but at the same time, I don't want him to just take whatever happens in the investigation as honest and good. Because we've seen it too many times. We know the board, all these people, they aren't interested in the truth. They're interested
true.
In protecting the university. Keeping the cash cow nice and happy. Nice and fat. Got to milk the cow for the money. So I don't know. It's weird that they're pushing the investigation back, seemingly saying, yeah, we don't have a deadline anymore. We've changed our mind. Like, what does that mean? Also, by giving themselves 14 days, is that 14 days, like, let's say they found the evidence to fire Urban Meyer on day one. Would they have just done that, or were they going to wait to the end of the 14 no matter what? Like, every day that goes by that there's not some type of official announcement, does that necessarily mean something good or bad? Like,
I mean,
if they found it on day one, would they have just said, the investigation is starting? An hour later, we found the smoking gun. He's fired.
Doubtful.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know how to read into the timeline now. Like, why would you, if you haven't found anything, also, if you found nothing at all worth, you know, deep diving, do you extend the timeline?
To make it seem like you did your due diligence?
That's my question. Or would you do that if you haven't found anything? Or would you say, it's 14 days. We found absolutely nothing. We're not extending the timeline. He's back. Or would you play the game of, well, if we extend it by 2 days, people will think we really took it seriously.
It's always good to have some deadline just so that people get their stuff done. I mean, everybody procrastinates. Everybody waits till the last minute in this day and age. So saying, hey, I need the report by Thursday, you know, makes sense or whatever.
Was it the president who said this should take 14 days? Because if this is an independent investigation,
I don't think so. I don't know. I honestly don't remember.
It was just Ohio State. They said we're conducting a 14-day investigation, and now they're saying we'll know when we know. Don't disregard the timeline.
Well, he was saying we wanted some time pressure on it.
Right.
So, if you believe him, I think that's okay. I think it's fine to say, hey, I'm hiring you to do this job. I'd like for you to be able to I'd like an update in 14 days no matter what. And then if you need more time because you found out that there's a lot
right.
more you have to get into, then let me know.
It's a good point.
That would be fine in my opinion. Final segment of the program of the week right here.
I have a rumor I want to drop in the final segment
the
of the show.
The Vol rumor mill
about
is on the prowl.
About a future opponent for the football Vols.
Don't forget about Pandemonium Reigns the Friday before the Florida game. Is that the 22nd or 21st? Well, the Florida game is the 22nd.
Read your emails.
Friday's the 21st.
Read the emails, Hodges.
I read the emails. I just didn't remember. Florida games September 22nd. Pandemonium reigns in World's Fair Park September 21st. The Friday night's going to be a tailgate into watching the 98 Florida-Tennessee game on a three-story projection. It's going to be incredible right there.
I am excited.
Yep.
Very excited.
The event is free, but they are accepting $5 donations for CARM, which would be a very kind thing if you could spare the $5. Live music, food trucks, vendors. Some of those vendors will have other food. Some of those vendors may even have beer, goodies, services. There's going to be some swag bags. VIP tickets are available. Just go to events.in, that's the letter N, with the old.com. You can go there, VIP tickets, sign up, make the donation even already if you want.
You said you had a good rumor, Vol Rumor Mill.
Yeah, okay, I got a nugget yesterday.
Go.
Why? I'm interested
to hear what it is.
It's about a future Tennessee opponent that is not on a schedule currently.
Just a Lady Vols thing like the UConn deal?
Yeah. What do you mean like that? Like how I knew about that before?
No. This is about football or?
Football.
Oh.
Football.
Nice.
Football.
Okay, you have my attention.
Apparently, there is discussion about a battle at Bristol 2. So there's that.
Opponent?
Clemson.
No! Clemson?
That's what I'm hearing.
Clemson?
That's the early floated rumor. Have a problem. That's the floated rumor I heard yesterday.
Clemson?
Potentially, B at B part two, Vols, Tigers.
It's not about the mountain. It's the climb.
I was looking at dates. 2020, you play Oklahoma. Why, I don't know. And now we might add Clemson. Maybe 21 or 23, because I think you have Oklahoma back here in 22. Is that right? So there's that. It's just a rumor. It's just hearsay at this point. Probably means a big load of nothing. But, yeah. BOB2 against CU in Johnson City, Bristol, Tri-Cities. What would we think about that? What do we think about that 3 years from now? Playing the Tigers. Good move, bad move.
Are you going to be really disappointed if Tennessee's not at least kind of back in the top 25 range in 3 years?
Are you kidding? Yeah, I'm going to be mad. Are you kidding me?
So that leads into my take on this entire situation.
Okay.
Bring on the Tigers, baby. Let's do it. 3 years from now, we better be back. If we're not, who the hell cares anyway? Bring them on. Bristol, Death Valley, the other Death Valley. I don't give a. Bring them on. Let's go. Maybe we can pay them back for stealing all our recruits. Let's do it.
Had to turn your mic way down on that one.
That's fine.
You got to back up if you're going to yell.
I did back up.
You got to back up more.
That's your job, Davey. I mean, thank you for doing it. Bring them on.
I don't.
No?
We already have a tough schedule.
Are you scared?
No, but we already have a tough schedule.
Are you scared?
No, but we already have a tough schedule. Why would we add them? I don't know. Does that make me a wuss?
Got to think ahead.
I am thinking ahead.
I'm thinking 18 playoff by then.
I'm thinking that needs to be like UNC Charlotte, and we get another win.
If we're going to do that, I'd rather just do a home and home.
That's a good point, too. It probably won't be 3 years. It'll probably be more like 5 or 8. That Notre Dame-Alabama thing is like 58 years from now. Like, there'll probably be an 18 playoff by then. You'll want the strength of schedule, even if you lose it.
All right.
And if you get killed, who cares?
We'll be firing another coach.
If you're not any good, it doesn't matter.
18.
John and Cody 19, talked about this a couple weeks
ago. That'd be year four for Pruitt. That's put up or shut up. That's firing time. I mean, if it ain't back.
You can look at it either way, but like I really don't care if you're 7-5 or 6-6 because you got beat by Clemson. But if you're good, oh baby.
Beating Clemson.
What a matchup.
Oh, in front of 185,000.
What a
Whoa,
matchup.
Oh, me. Ho, ho, baby. How much was it? Was it 145? What was the Bristol?
I thought it held 160 something.
Right, and they have to do some things to adjust it for football, so maybe it's less. Maybe it's 145.
I think that's what they listed the attendance as.
Broke world record.
Mm.
That would be something.
Would you go? I couldn't see where it when I
would
went.
Would I go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go.
156,990.
156. Wow. Yeah, I'd definitely go. I'd go to that one. I thought it was fun. I mean, I wouldn't want to do it every year, but you know, every five to six, 7 years, yeah, I'd be fine. I'd have no problem with that. That'd be, what, 5 years if it was 2021, 16, mm-hmm. 2020, yeah.
And we are undefeated at the Battle of Bristol. We have history on our side.
We don't lose there.
Battle of Bristol champions.
Confetti flying again. Mm-hmm. that's the trophy, right? Get them rings. Got to get them some rings.
That's the Photoshop with the life box.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Absolutely terrible. No, I'd take it. Sure. You've convinced me.
You're in? Bring them on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in a game like that, you got to have a marquee matchup. You got to have a big opponent. You'd outdraw Clemson to the game for sure.
Yeah, don't give me any more Bowling Greens in Nashville, please.
No, that was a bad one.
It's supposed to be UAB.
Even worse.
That's a good point. Tennessee Clemson 2021, Battle of Bristol 2, maybe.
At least they had that Dieter kid.
That's true. That was fun to watch. Vols will scrimmage tomorrow?
I think
it's
so.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get some new starting quarterback notes.
Trey Wallace, if it's optional, be on the scene. Check out his show 1 to 3. Talk Sports is next from 10 to 1. The Drive Overtime. We got you covered all day. Keep it right here on Fan Run Radio.